Moncrief on News Talk.
For some years now, the Large Hadron Collider, a 27-kilometre underground ring in Switzerland, has been slowly unpicking some of the secrets of the universe. But at the end of the month, they're going to turn it off for a little while. To explain, we're joined by James Keaveney, Assistant Professor in the School of Physics in UCD. James, good afternoon.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Try and explain to us what it does.
Yeah, that's the best place to start. So the Large Hadron Collider does what it says on the tin, so to speak. It's very large and it collides hadrons. So hadrons are subatomic particles that we can fairly easily manipulate. Usually we're talking about protons. So they're charged particles, very, very small things. And what we do is we accelerate them around a big old ring that's about 100 meters underground on the French-Swiss border. We zip them around as fast as we possibly can. And when we're happy with the speed, we basically make them crash into each other. Because the core idea of particle physics, that's the field we're talking about, is that by studying the debris of these collisions, we can really learn about the fundamental physics and the laws that govern nature at this tiny scale.
Okay. And from on that tiny scale, can we infer larger lessons about the universe?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's following this old idea of reductionism, that if you want to understand anything, the best place to start is by looking at the constituent pieces. So, you know, if you're interested in the universe, then you might think about galaxies, then you might think about planets, and then you might think about, you know, people, oceans, rocks, mountains. If you keep going down, you get to particle physics, where we are not happy with studying atoms, we're not happy studying nuclei. We go as far as technology allows us, and that's the world of quarks and leptons. They're the tiniest structures that we can experimentally study. We think that's probably as fundamental as it gets, but we're not going to, you know, rely on theory for that. We're going to keep bashing our particles together as much as we can until we can find answers to deep questions about why that is the fundamental level and how do these things interact, and exactly as you say, how that pertains to the everyday life that we are more familiar with.
Yeah, you've been at it. It must be a mad-looking thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's no substitute for getting in the lift shaft, going down 100 meters, getting your hard hat on, you know, and then stepping out into this kind of underground cathedral of physics. I first went over there in 2007, I kind of got in on a summer student program. And, you know, the day before I was working on the farm in Mayo, you know, shoveling silage and the likes. And the next day I was, you know, harnessed to a big detector trying to fiddle cables together and, you know, working with about five different nationalities, all of which very distinct cultures, but very similar kind of enthusiasm for physics and fundamental science. So CERN is a remarkable place, both for the technology, but also for the people and the atmosphere the two things together create. It's incredibly international, as I said, but there's just an amazing passion and enthusiasm for curiosity about the natural world.
And what were they hoping when it first started operating? What kinds of discoveries were they hoping to make? And have they made progress at the rate everybody had aspired to?
Yeah, that's a great question. So thinking about 2007, it makes me smile a bit, because there was a kind of fantastic naivety about myself and the young generation there. We kind of figured we're going to turn this big old machine on and, you know, the Nobel Prizes are going to flow. There's going to be discovery after discovery. We're going to rewrite the textbooks. It hasn't really turned out that way. We've had one major discovery, which was the Higgs boson, and that resulted in the Nobel Prize for the predictors of that Higgs boson in 2013. But the major surprise is there hasn't been anything else conclusive. There's a lot of interesting hints in the data, patterns, but right now, the Higgs is the only major discovery. But that in itself is maybe a deeper mystery, is that our theories are just unreasonably successful at predicting what the data looks like. So right now, if we take our data and we compare it to what the theories say should be there, it matches beautifully, more or less across the board. But we know for mathematical and theoretical reasons that the theories can't be the full story. So we have this huge mystery that we know these theories have to be incomplete, yet they seem to be incredibly successful.
Yeah.
So that's why we're so motivated to keep going.
Yeah. So they're going to turn it off for a while at the end of the month. Does it need a bit of a clean or what are they going to do to it?
I'm sure it probably does need a bit of a clean, but that's not the main motivation. At some point, we get into diminishing returns with the detectors and the collider set up the way they are. We've been taking data for about 11 years at the max energy and the max intensity of the collisions. And we've kind of squeezed most of the science out of that configuration that we can. So it's much more advantageous for us now to actually down tools for about 4 years and build a bolder version of the detector and the collider so that we can take really the ideas. We can take data at a much larger rate. And we are really excited. It's a very nice time, the shutdowns, because you get to kind of fiddle with the new version of the equipment and kind of, push the technological boundaries back a little bit. And just have to mention that it's a very important time for Ireland because we've just joined CERN. So it's extra exciting for us here in Ireland because we have the chance to kind of get in at the ground level on this upgrade program and kind of bring our contribution right when it would be most acutely felt because we're about to, create a new setup.
Over time, though, James, in 10 years' time, in 20 years' time, will it be necessary to build an even bigger collider?
Yeah, I would say more than likely, yes. That's certainly the plans of CERN. We can project kind of how far we can go with this setup, and it's really, really exciting. But we're likely to have even deeper questions, better questions, we hope, and that will need to be answered with a whole new collider. So the plans at CERN are to conclude around 2040 and build a whole new accelerator complex that would dwarf actually our current setup. So technology being what it is, the quickest way to higher energy is to build a bigger collider.
My word.
So it would be a 100-kilometer tunnel, 100 meters below the Swiss-French border again. And yeah, obviously just on the civil engineering, that's a huge, huge, huge task. So it's still at the planning phase and would need like huge international cooperation and agreement. But I'm really crossing fingers and toes that we get there.
Yeah. Now, a stupid question. This is like physicists will laugh at me for asking this question. As I understand it, the particles can get up to 99% of the speed of light in the current collider. Would it ever be possible to get them at 100% of the speed of light?
Well, according to relativity, the answer is definitively no. Ah. So let's go with no. as a scientist, we'll never deal in absolutes. But yeah, no, that would break all our frameworks of physics. So anyone claiming to predict something faster than the speed of light is usually,
Or even at the speed of light is what I mean.
Yeah. So we're very close to the speed of light right now, but it's like, the closer you get to it, the harder it is, the more energy you have to put in. So there's no chance to get to 100% of the speed of light, but we can get extraordinarily close. And yeah, that's a little idiosyncrasy of relativity. The energy can go up enormously, but we will only very gradually approach the speed of light and never attain it.
Right. Where does, this one cost billions to make, an even bigger one, even more billions. Where does CERN get the money for all this? And is it difficult to explain quite complex concepts in physics to, whoever's holding the checkbook?
Yeah, absolutely. So CERN was basically instituted after the war as a means of bringing together European nations, like in the spirit of scientific collaboration. So therefore, it's mainly funded from those European nations. So the major European economies would throw in a lot of euros. But there's other kinds of contributions that come in kind from the States, from Japan, for instance, who would contribute, elements of the detector technology that would actually deliver some equipment and so on. So it's, the success of CERN absolutely depends on really close international collaboration and cooperation, also including nations that may not easily cooperate otherwise. So I think it's a testament to what can be done when these countries kind of look at what their common needs are and what bonds them. So I think it's also a great and exciting project, for international cooperation.
Yeah, that makes a pleasant change. James, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was James Keaveney, Assistant Professor in the School of Physics in UCD. Moncrief.
Weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.